This is Kingston Live, and today we're joined by a group that weave history and tradition into something that's more than the sum of its parts. Since forming in 2008, the Gertrudes have seen so many changes in membership that calling them a band might be misleading. Much like fellow Ontario megagroup Broken Social Scene, the Gertrudes are more of a collective than a band, and with a variety of members comes a surplus of creativity. A folk band in the original sense, the Gertrudes draw on the genre's long history of storytelling and collecting influences from around the world, drawing on musical conventions from the British Isles to Western Africa. Much like many bands, both local and beyond, the pandemic has posed several unexpected challenges for the Gertrudes. But limiting in-person gathers hasn't stopped them from developing a new project. Riley and Sideshow joined them after rehearsal at Next Church to discuss their forthcoming album Emergency to Emergency, which finds the band once again applying their socially conscious lyrics to their rich sonic tapestry.
I didn't need to plan social activity because I would just like, oh, I'll go to Miziki and all my friends will be there.
And it was just like, wow, the band's here, like, so good.
It doesn't feel like a competition, it feels like a collaboration, and that's really special, I think.
Kingston is my heart.
You are the Gertrudes. Do you want to introduce yourselves individually?
Yeah, let's start down there.
Hi, I'm Matt Gertrude. my name is Matt Rogalski, and I play guitar in the Gertrudes.
My name is Jason Mercer. I play banjo. I am the newest member.
I'm Pete Bowers, and I play drums.
I'm Greg Tilson. I play guitar.
I'm Annie Clifford, and I used to play banjo, but now I play violin.
You
know, welcome to Kingston Live. Sorry,
I gotta say something. We were watching you guys rehearse earlier, and I counted nine of you on the stage. Mm. How do you guys get paid? How does that
merchandise?
Does that happen when there's not? I remember I played in a four piece, and we added another guitar player, and I thought we were gonna go broke. So
I remember we once played a festival called Blue Skies just north of here, and I think everyone got paid, but at that particular festival, we used up all of their tents and thermarests, and like we just used up everything, probably ate like half their food. But sometimes we get paid, but mostly it's a volunteer gig.
There are two players in the band who this is their primary career is music, and so we pay them and the rest of us volunteer our time.
Plus, the guarantees for the band is $25,000.
It's totally worth that. We haven't got a gig yet, but.
Yeah. It's funny how no one is hiring us at that price.
We are we're recording live in your rehearsal space, which is Next Church down on Colborne Street. And this is such an amazing space for rehearsal, for writing, for everything that goes into being a band. How did you land on this place as being kind of home base for the Gertrudes?
It's kitty corner to Skeldon Park. That's part of it. I think with the Skeldon Park Arts Festival, we've played a lot here. And it just so happens that Josh, our accordion player, how does he identify himself with the Next Church?
He's one of the ministry
elders. Yeah, yeah. Things. So there is actually someone in the band that is part of the church here. And I would say the majority of us live in like a 3 or 4 block radius of this place. It's a nice place to rehearse and perform.
Up until a month ago, I lived in the apartment building behind here, and it was super cool coming through on like a Sunday afternoon and like being able to just hear a little tidbits, little tastes of your rehearsal. So thank you for that.
Yeah, that's good to hear.
I just took my mask off. It smells like a church in here. I don't walk into them often, but this is what I remember them smelling.
We have rapid tests. Do you want us to shove a swizzle stick?
No, I'm okay. I'm enjoying the smell of
blue hair.
Yes, I am. Yeah, this is a very cool venue. We were talking a little earlier, just after you guys finished up rehearsing, about how this would be a really cool venue for performances and stuff. Does this venue get used very often for performances?
Yeah, not too much.
Well, I would say a few times a year, I get in touch with the church and ask to use it for one purpose or another. Skeldon Park Arts Festival has produced or co-produced a number of shows here. Some of them have been like really wonderful. It's a great acoustic space, and you can host a big band. But it's also really good for an intimate show with just a solo singer-songwriter. So over the years, there's been quite a few shows here, but it's not a every week
they are starting to like book more bands in here to rehearse. And I kind of have this dream of having like open rehearsals where, you know, you have regular times. Like we always rehearse Sunday afternoons where you open the door and just let people come in. And like, you know, it's not a formal performance, but it's just a chance to hang out and be relaxed about it. I don't know how the rest of the band feels about that, but we're definitely trying to create like a welcoming space here, like with lots of music for sure.
I think that's such a running theme in the Gertrudes, is your sense of community and staying local and helping out locally, not only with your efforts with Skeleton Park Arts and Music Festival, with being part of this space for your rehearsals and performances and stuff, but even recently with your latest single, I think, Parham, which is dealing obviously with the events that went down in Parham, just mm-hmm. north of Kingston last summer, and the charitable contribution behind that. Do you want to talk a little bit about that effort?
So that song, like you said, was trying to tell the story of an incident of arson and shooting that took place, a tragedy in Parham. And I think it kind of fits the theme of the album, because with that one, we raised funds for the Canadian Mental Health Association. So I think you're seeing a lot of songs written about what we're calling hidden pandemics, you know, like mental health. Emergency to Emergency, the title track, it kind of speaks to addictions. And the thing that actually brought us back together as a band was trying to create a song that showed our support for the people that were living in Bell Park, the encampment, and people that were suffering from homelessness. And that was called Forced Eviction. And Jason Mercer produced that one. What was your experience like for being introduced to the Gertrudes and that cacophony of sound?
Well, it started off small and grew three sizes. Yeah, three sizes too big.
Mm-hmm. Started with Greg in my backyard.
Yeah, pandemic recording.
Yeah, and then I kind of took it over. It was all done remotely, so to speak. You know, people recorded over at Matt's. Some people came over to my place. Me and Pete live on Wolf Island, so we worked at my place. And it was kind of cobbled together, but I'm used to that kind of process, but I thought it was a smaller band when I first started on it.
And then
tracks just kept on coming.
That's a cool theme. You're talking about some of the themes of the album, and fiddle tunes are a theme of the album. And Jason mm-hmm. thought actually we were a square dance band.
That's right. Mm-hmm,
yeah, when I first met these guys, I was playing with Teilhard Frost, who's sort of a loosely associated member with the group, yep. and well known in Kingston and abroad, and I was just getting to know him, and we were playing a lot of fiddle tunes ourselves, and then he started to invite me to these events to play banjo, and he would just sort of toss them out like, oh, there's a square dance at the school, why don't you just drop by? And I would drop by, and you know, I think I met Annie first, I think, or
yeah,
Greg.
That's right, we were playing tunes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was at the school, and I didn't know anybody, I had just moved here, so my first impression, the first three things that I did with these guys were all square dances. So my impression for real was, hey, they're a great old-timey square dance band. And then Pete was like, oh no, they've got albums and they've got a history. And he started to just give me CDs, and I was blown away by the depth and stuff.
But that's what was sparking, getting back to your question, like of Parham and some of these songs, like the content of the lyrics were definitely pandemic related, hidden pandemic related. But the thing that was sparking this new album were these old 19th century fiddle tunes that people like Teilhard was teaching us and Annie was sharing with us. And so embedded in each song on this new album is an old like Irish North American fiddle tune. There's a Métis one in there too, and an African fiddle tune. So it's got many stories, this album.
The African one, maybe Matt could talk about it a bit too, because
that's from Forced
Fiction. It's got this fascinating history where, as I think we're all becoming more and more aware, the cultural and intellectual contributions of people of color have been so erased. And there's quite a bit of like folk history around fiddle tunes in North America and the British Isles and Scotland and Ireland and Wales. But there's very little that details the cultural and creative and intellectual contributions of the people who are kidnapped in Africa and sold into slavery and then held by unscrupulous slave owners in slavery, sometimes for generations. And so Matt is kind of taking the lead on looking into the origins of this tune, because mm-hmm. to us it sounds African. It sounds like an African tune. We can't find anything about it.
Well, I mean, it's in a 1782 Scottish songbook as a yeah. Negro jig. But when you hear it played, particularly when I heard Teyar play it on gourd banjo, mm-hmm. The banjo is an African instrument, right? It comes from the Ngoni and similar instruments in Western Africa. That's up Mali way. But there doesn't seem to be any scholarship around where this song was collected, whose song it was. You know, I imagine it must have been collected from an enslaved African, mm-hmm. Somewhere along the trade routes, you know. But it may never be possible to know exactly where it came from, whether it was composed in Africa or whether it was composed in North America or somewhere else in the Caribbean, or who knows. But we're still digging for sources, and mm-hmm. Teyar's been really helpful, and Tim Erickson, a friend who's a old-time musician, has lately been providing some sources to try and dig into this. So you never know. We may come up with more stories about where it came from, but it's a beautiful tune.
It's cool to have these contemporary stories, but then to kind of position them in these old fiddle tunes to give kind of perspective, like, of, you know, pandemics aren't new, and these songs are really old that we're playing from. So, yeah. You know, as you can see, we continue to talk about them and explore that history in the context.
Yeah, it's a common thread. That's the way I sort of see it.
See, I think that's really interesting. And we were watching you rehearse earlier, and, you know, just finding all the textures in the song as you were going back to a part and going, let's try the accordion doing that, and, you know, and finding those textures, kind of weaving those in. And then you've got some heavy sort of subject matter within the lyrics that you have written, or the songs that you have written on there. How do you find sort of weaving all those and the textures of the music, but then still making music that people want to dance to?
Yeah.
You know, it's a very interesting melting pot of things going on there.
It's yet to be determined, right? We haven't performed them yet. Yeah. So I hope people dance to them.
Might not, though.
What you were seeing, that, you know, there was actually a song that you saw us rehearsing before this interview that we haven't really played before. So that's the unique scenario, which I'm sure you're encountering with a lot of bands, you know, recording during the pandemic, a lot of remote recordings of, like, individuals, you know, in their own home or studio or backyard in our case. And it's now that we're, like, finally able to rehearse together. And it's weird, right? Trying to, like, learn these songs that we've written. But yeah, I think rhythm is pretty key, right? These songs, they do have a lot of rhythm. Like Tarrant and Jason, like, even if you just hear banjo and fiddle playing, there's tremendous rhythm. And so, Pete, like, what do you think? So we've got Pete Bowers on drums and Arden Rogalski on percussion, and they're, like, you know, supplying that rhythm that hopefully is going to, you know, provide energy for people.
Yeah, hopefully, Pete.
No pressure.
I have the responsibility to make everybody dance. Yeah. No, but, no, I mean, I end up, you know, I love that the stories behind these, and then when I hear the banjo tunes that gave birth to the songs, in a sense, that you can actually hear them, the songs, but what I'm responding to is what I'm hearing that people playing, and they're rhythmic songs, so it becomes quite easy to make them what they become. So it's really, yeah, and then there's so many players in the band with are taking care of rhythms in all sorts of ways, like the rhythm guitars, the pianos, the bass, everything. But so I think it's a really rich launch pad for the songs, and then it just becomes something in the mix.
I want to go back to a term that you used a few moments ago of hidden pandemics, which I think is such an elegant way to phrase so many things that have been going on throughout history, throughout our world. And you touched on stuff like the Bell Park emergency and opioid crisis, stuff like that. The title of the album is Emergency to Emergency. Yeah. Does that kind of tie into, you know, we're going from one emergency of one pandemic that was hidden to another, and now this more broadly world-known pandemic of COVID-19? Am I pulling on the right thread, or am I just making stuff up for myself?
Yeah. yeah, here. Yeah, I think so. I think you said it quite eloquently. And from my perspective as like a privileged white person, it's this feeling of the pandemic has helped wake someone like up to me. Someone like me up to suffering that I didn't see before, right? And I think that's that Bell Park encampment. As for the city councilors, it woke us up to a housing crisis and to a crisis of people that didn't have a home, right? And couldn't find a home. And there's another song that we're working on. The original Fiddle Toots called Sail Away Ladies that Teilhard taught me. And it's called Boys Town, which is another term to a part of Skelton Park neighborhood. It's all like boys' names of streets, like John and James and Patrick and Charles. And so that song, in a way, it's me like not knowing how to deal with my privilege, right? Because it's a song about displacement and gentrification and me that has this home that I'm going to pass on to my son. And you know, it's grappling with those things. But I think you're right, like the hidden part of it is just that hopefully they're becoming less hidden.
Well, and privilege is so comfy.
Totally.
Right? And I think like most of the people who are, I don't want to over generalize, but like lawmakers and politicians tend to be fairly comfortable. And so they make policies directed at the middle class, and being in the middle class is awesome. Like there is nothing wrong. You got this great house, you got a cushy life, and the pandemic was such a wonderful opportunity for the middle class and the upper classes to realize, oh, like living in fear is a thing and living with constant anxiety is a thing. And oh, look, there's all these people and that's their baseline life. Like, and it's really uncomfortable. And what can we all do as a society to move away from that? And so moving towards things like universal basic income or dealing with housing issues or dealing with domestic violence on a gross scale and sexual assault, all that stuff that's going on with the military. These are all wonderful opportunities for people who normally live a very comfortable life to experience anxiety and experience fear and then extrapolate from that they don't want anybody to live like that. And we've got lots of power, so I remain very hopeful in the face of all this stuff. But to link it back to the fiddle tunes, for me, when I think about these tunes and these tunes that are maybe African in origin or these tunes that are Irish, and it was made like my and Greg's families, our backgrounds are both people who emigrated during the famine, which was the first political famine in history and lasted close to 12 years. And like significant amounts of the population died and significant amounts emigrated. Greg's great, great, great granddad immigrated alone at the age of 13. Jeez. Right?
Wow.
So that kind of context, to bring that back to our own cushy middle class lives and have our eyes open to that stuff. And yet these people managed to bring these wonderful tunes with them. You know, they weren't scraped back to the bare bones of what it is to be a mammal. They retained this creative intelligence in the face of tremendous trauma, and props to them. Like,
I think we're, you know, it's nothing new. We're still singing about what we see. And unfortunately, a lot of the content in these songs are what we're seeing, in particular in this neighborhood where we're sitting, right? So that's what we're singing about.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's, I feel like, you know, you have some motivation in what's going on around you to write these songs. I've spoken with a lot of musicians over the course of the pandemic, and everyone has had, there are two very different sides to the creative process I've found for musicians. And one is, I had all this time to be creative, so I got real creative. Mm-hmm. You guys have created an album in that time, so maybe you're on that side. But I've also spoken to others who said, I was depressing. I just couldn't write like that. I couldn't create like that. How did it affect you as artists when all of this started to go down? Did it push you more to be creative, or did you kind of draw back from it?
Well, I think it was Pete's idea to like, why don't we just start, you know, throwing things on, you know, recording little bits and see what happens. And that was the spark, I think.
Well, the funny thing was that Matt and I would send emails out to our Gertrude email list and say, well, we don't have to actually all find a way to get together. We can just email parts together, which we had been suggesting pre-pandemic. But then when the pandemic came along, it had that other thing. And actually, I think this the Bell Park story is actually a perfect illustration, because homelessness has always been an issue, but in a pandemic, the idea of kicking people out of that, the minimal safety they kind of had, was insane. So, you know, that raised the interest for it. And since once we had a spark of a reason to do a particular song, yeah. I don't think we were planning to make an album. We were just, let's do this thing. Mm-hmm. And then, but we had in our head that this is a proof of concept. Can we make music this way? And then we had Jason on board and on the island making it easy. And then having producers on either side of the water was hilarious.
I want to hear what the co-producers here perspective, Jason Mercer and Matt Rogalski, because what really happened is, you know, we started having a bit of a party. Like, it became social. Like, you know, on Parham alone, there's, I think, over 50 people. There's a choir. Like, people are sending in their vocal parts from their cell phone. And, like, there's just so many, of course, that goes in the laps of the co-producers, right?
Sure, they had tons of time. There was nothing going on.
But it became really fun for us. A lot of work for the co-producers.
Well, no, but it was also super fun to do the mixing. And Jason and I split the duties on that, right? So there's 12 songs on the album, and I think it's evenly split.
Pretty even, yeah.
And it was super fun to... sometimes I was recording things at my place and sending them to you. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, often you were recording, you did all the drums. Mm-hmm. And sent them to me, so it was super fun to, you know, receive a bunch of files and then be like, oh, what's in this one? what are we getting now? The new layers for
Can
this
I
song.
Open the present now?
Yeah.
It's like digital Christmas every day.
Yeah. Basically, yes.
Well, it started slow. I mean, I'm used to kind of working that way in my prior studio life before moving to this area. That's kind of how it was done for some of the projects I was involved in, because people lived across the country and whatnot. So I was comfortable with that process, but it was interesting to see this develop. And that's the thing about creativity, is if there is that spark, you never know where it leads. It might just flame out, but it could also catch fire and start a whole conversation. And that's kind of what happened, you know? Because my understanding was that these guys hadn't made an album for quite some time. Everyone was busy doing different things. Scheduling was an issue. It is a large band. And this just had the coalescing effect of bringing people together, giving them the time and the space to create. So,
and we're fortunate that Mercer has some background with big bands like the Bourbon Tabernacle Choir, you know, so he knows. I remember you saying at one point, oh yeah, I understand consensus in this context.
Yeah.
You know, like the realities of how that really goes down.
For sure.
And you did mention that the band has been going for so long. I think the Gertrudes have existed in one form or another since 2008.
At least.
I know with any band, especially of a band of a great number of people, there is always a little bit of a struggle keeping everything going for a length of time. What do you think has been your secret to longevity in a band of this size for such a length?
Greg tells us what to do and makes and he makes it sound like it's what we always wanted all along.
He has some form of weird mind control.
Salesman is what that is.
I think we're all just good friends, you know, like we all live in the neighborhood and our kids know each other and we see each other all the time, right? So that helps. But for sure, like people come and go, you know, and that's kind of beautiful too. Like, you know, a former accordion player is the dad at the same school with my kid, Owen Fernley. I see him every day. You know, maybe he'll come back sometime and play as well. In fact, he has, you know, so that's kind of cool. That's why I know people don't always like it. I use the term collective. I like the idea of people coming and going and it evolving that way.
Yeah, but it's like a collective with a benevolent dictator at the heart. Which I prefer as a power structure.
It works well.
It's very efficient. Yeah.
Being such a large group, and you talked about the songs having so many contributors and having to layer those things, did you ever get to a point where you're like, okay, I think we need to just, stop with these? Or were you like, keep them coming, more layers?
Yeah, for sure. Lots of layers. I took a cue from Matt because those first few songs, I was kind of just allowing everyone's contributions to be there without making any edits, or nothing was left on the editing room floor, so to speak. And then I started hearing some of the work that Matt was doing, and I was like,
lots of stuff. Being less desperate. Yeah, I was like, oh, that's cool. You can do that. Okay, great.
Well, there's three prior full-length albums that sort of set this, you know, the tone of the kind of arrangements that we're capable of. And because there's so many amazing textures and timbres in these instruments, there's sort of infinite recombinational possibilities, right? So if you're sculpting a mix of a song, it's like you're doing an arrangement at the same time. It's about, you know, like finding the flavors for the first verse, the flavors for the second verse, and they can be quite different, but there's still, you know, a continuity of sound that is remarkably consistent and identifiable as the Gertrudes.
Yeah, that allowed me to take 50 tracks and edit them down to six solid tracks with spice.
And then when it's time to perform, we say, what have we done?
That's, I was going to say, how like, if you have that many layers on the record, and I mean, I know a lot of bands have a lot of layers on their records. How do you recreate that? How does that happen in life?
We're trying to...
You get four extra singers.
Yeah, it's true. You know, like, it's still expanding and contracting. Like, Anna Sudak, Mariah Horner, Arden Rogalski. Like, these are all new players that are all... Megan Bala on fiddle and vocals. So, like, Dylan Lodge was part of the recording process as well and is kind of like our in-house sound tech. So, like, we're just lucky, right? We've got all this talent to... like you say, kind of try to recreate things. So that's what we're doing right now, is we're literally trying to figure out how to recreate these recordings.
And I also will say, at the core of all of them are just really good, like a single song. You could, like Greg could perform them by himself and the song will be right there. In the same sense that the fiddle tunes are right there behind them. And everything else is just kind of window dressing or, it all plays an important role, but the heart of it is the song.
That's what actually feels really strong for me with this, is we're just resting on these really old fiddle melodies. So there's these melodies that are really strong at the foundation of each of these songs. And I don't know, that feels good. I think it helps with confidence.
You guys have a new video dropping. Well, we'll be out, I think, by the time this podcast drops. But let's talk about this coming Wednesday, I think, is the release of the video for Terpenes. Can you tell us anything about that?
Oh, my God. So these two guys, Curtis Chen and
Jonathan Barton,
they are so ridiculous. And so they set themselves up on this office swivel chair with an apple crate duct taped to the top of it. And the one's sitting on it with the camera and the other's just spinning him around and around and around and around. And that was, like, that was it. That was the long and short.
I think what they were trying to do, by the way, these guys, the same two guys, did our music video 8 years ago for us, All the Dollar Bills. And they were in high school at that time.
That's right.
And now Curtis is like an architect. He's actually the youngest architect in the history of Canadian architecture.
Wow.
And yeah, he's a smart dude.
They're wonderful.
And Jonathan Barton's now a professional photographer. And so it's really nice that they were like, let's do this again. But I think what they were trying to capture in this, like, it's very repetitive, you know, and it's dark at the beginning. We all kind of look rough. And I think he was just trying to, like, portray what we've been going through, right? Like, in isolation.
Do we want to throw to Terpenes? Is that the track we want to throw in?
I think so, yeah.
Sure,
all right, cool.
We're happy with that song.
How do we want to cue that up?
Well, I can tell you a bit about the history of Terpenes. One of the things that the Gertrudes have sort of tried to support is local agriculture. And recently, the Gertrudes weren't making music, the United Nations dropped this report on how supporting local agriculture could basically change the world. It would employ people, it would empower women, it would empower children, it would solve a myriad of environmental problems. And they re-released it. And so in response to that, some of the Gertrudes took up home canning and gardening, which, you know, are very noble efforts. But in October, you're left with just this mountain of green tomatoes. And for people who are trying to, like, do the right thing and live close to the earth, and suddenly there's bushels of this completely inedible fruit, it's a bit like of a tear your hair out sort of problem. And so Greg was just, those of us who can, were emotionally distressed, and Greg was responding to our anxiety.
Mm-hmm. And also, you know, getting back to the privilege point. Yeah, it's.
I don't know if the microphone caught that, but he said, I thought it was about weed.
But also, you know.
Oh, it's about green tomatoes. Well, it's all green tomatoes.
What I hear in the song is about getting outdoors.
Yes.
It's about getting outdoors and
the freedom
and meeting
of
outdoors
some people. Yeah.
And the terpenes of the forest, mm-hmm. not only the weed.
Also, I thought green tomatoes was a metaphor, to be honest.
I read,
yeah, exactly. Green tomatoes. I just got a bag of green tomatoes. I also, the pandemic also factors into it because you're stuck in your box and you have to get outside. Mm-hmm. And you're going crazy.
Mm-hmm. I want you to meet me outside.
We're really lucky that we can escape to Annie's cabin, you know, up near Charbot Lake on the Mississippi River. And, you know, we were able to do that. Not everyone can do that. So that's partly what it's about, too. Oh yeah, that's actually a good story too.
Right.
The beginning of this song is the sound of a jackhammer, and like a real jackhammer. And the reason that is
it's actually a pile driver.
I'm sorry. Do you want to?
Yeah.
So he has a studio on Wolf Island called Neptune's
Machine. And you know they're in the midst of making the ferry terminal over there, as they are on this side, for the new ferry to Wolf Island, and it was quite quiet for a time, and you know we were all able to work in the studio without any interruptions, but then when the real heavy machinery came around, it was really something, because you know you couldn't get away from the sound. It's very loud, and we happened to be recording. It was you and me, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and we were laying down these drum parts for this tune, and it was exactly in time with the pile driver. And
I
was
like, go.
We're very, very close, like unnaturally close. So I immediately grabbed a mic and stuck it out the door and tried to record it. And it would come and go. It fades in and out. But I was able to capture one chunk of it that was almost exactly the right tempo. And just threw it in as a joke, almost as a count-in for the song, so that other people could record to it and have a sync. But then it sort of took on a life of its own, and I ended up sort of putting it into little sections of the song.
1, 2, 3, 2020, won't you leave it to the feds who can cough up the money more rapid than water that's been falling in the mountain wood? Out through the front door, leaving the city, we can breathe in the terpenes, and it's such a pity that you're screaming in your jammies in a 10x10 rented hell. I'm going out of my mind, need you to meet me outside, where we can get out of our heads and we can beat up the seconds of an endless time. We'll be late.
Thank you for listening to Kingston Live. Be sure to subscribe on your platform of choice and follow us on Facebook and Instagram. For more great Kingston music, check out the Kingston Live playlist on Spotify. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out our new website, kingstonlive.ca. You can also hear our sister show, Kingston Live On Air, on Amherst Island Radio and CFRC.
Our original plan for the music video, Jason Mercer couldn't actually make the video recording, but he doesn't play a whole lot on the song, so our original idea is we'd slap him in a safety vest with a jackhammer, and that would be his instrument.
This may still happen. I don't know. I kind of like this idea.
The Church Bells from the Island made it on the album, too, I believe.
Yeah, right? Yeah. This, and also, Matt did a lot of sound recording. And
yeah, there's actually a lot of field recordings sprinkled throughout these songs. Mm-hmm. So can I mention the bee tree?
Yeah.
Because this is a beautiful experience I had up towards Battersea. There's a property called Leopard Frog. And Chris, who owns that property, used to have a studio there. But I was up there one day just on a summer day, and they have a huge black locust tree in their driveway. And the tree, I mean, it towers, and it was full of bees, just, you know, pollinating, going about their business. But it was like a super huge tree, just chock full of bees, and it was making this incredible drone. So I made a recording, a long recording, like, and just lying under the tree listening at that time, and it turned out to be almost perfectly in tune with this song, How Deep in the Ground, which is about soil renewal, right, Greg?
Yeah.
And so I thought it was very nice to include these pollinators and their drone as part of the song.
Mm-hmm. The United Church on Wolf Island, the bell was ringing once when we were recording, and that fit perfectly in with Parham.
On so many levels, right? Because they lost their church, and they're actually going to create a monument of the bell. They saved the bell, so it was so perfect that Jason was able to capture that sound as the last thing you hear on the song Parham.
Brilliant. And that goes so so well with the notion of local agriculture. You're locally sourcing sounds that were just naturally occurring organically near the record.
Yeah, very true.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Your dog.
Our dog
features on it on a lot of tracks.
Again, it's the reality of pandemic recording. You know, there are like lawnmowers and a lot of birds and dogs. So.
Me and Greg have this dog, and he mostly lies there. Like, he's mostly a complete lump. And then every now and again, when his, you know, something upsets him, like it's got to be something big, like an earthquake. Wolf! It's just like over. Like whatever you were trying to do is.
It's very cute. I was recalling the good time we had in the backyard with the Goat Steppers recording. Right. It's a New Orleans style marching band here in Kingston, led by Spencer Evans. And recording outdoors just provided the perfect ambience and sound for that kind of music, right? It's like it just sounded natural in the outdoors.
That was a beautiful thing to capture, just because that's a thing that happens in our neighborhood. They parade throughout the streets, like all the Goat Steppers. And so just to have that sound and the imagery of a parade kind of moving through one of the songs that Matt recorded in his backyard, it's awesome.
I'd love to know what you guys think it is about Kingston and its music community, because it seems like you've even talked about the idea of using Next Church as like sort of a communal practice place, you know, where people can just show up and jam. And what is it to you? And I mean, obviously the local, and especially this area, is really important to you, as it shows in the songs on this record especially. What is it to you that makes Kingston so special when it comes to the music in this town?
Well, for me personally, like, I think you hit a good point there. Like, it's often about the spaces, you know? Like, when I first arrived in Kingston, it was about the grad club. Like, I spent all my time, and Virginia Clark was booking, and still does, like, amazing acts. And And that's where we started an open mic, you know, and a lot of the band members performed in that. And that's kind of how the Gertrudes started, like a lot of bands do. But, you know, we were part of a collective called the Artel Gallery, where there was a lot of music. And as you know, like the mansion, you know, the toucan, like it's often about, you know, the spaces that provide a place for bands to not only to play, but to meet each other and form new bands and experiment. And fortunately, Kingston has this history of this rich downtown of live music. And it also has a history of, maybe more so than other cities, this kind of camaraderie and like cooperating with each other and, you know, playing in each other's bands and supporting each other's bands. It's not very competitive here. So that, I think, has always made like this rich bed to create on in Kingston. What do you guys think?
I think you're onto it. And now the Wolf Island is adding to that mix with mm-hmm. the hotel and the Wolf Island Records that we're doing this with. And
totally.
Jason and I play in things there and all those combinations. Yeah, there's just a lot of musicians in Kingston, and they have a lot of fun is basically what happens. I'm not sure what makes it different.
I'm glad you mentioned Wolf Island Records, just because we're super excited about, like, Jason Mercer's part of that, Chris Brown's part of that. The hotel on Wolf Island, like, get ready for a mecca of arts happenings and music. And we're just really lucky to be part of the Wolf Island Records to kind of be part of what's emerging. Do you want to say anything about that, Jason?
Well, I'm not actually a part of it. It is Chris's...
Well, you do live right next door to them.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a part of the scene for sure. But it is Chris's... Chris Brown has a studio over there called The Post Office. And it's his record label. And it's his sort of... collective, I guess. I am very close with Chris, so, and as is Pete. So we are involved in a lot of the projects mm-hmm. that happen there. And we feed things such as this towards mm-hmm. towards that. Mm-hmm. But
I think we might see some of the things that we're talking about, like a space is being created.
Exactly. Yeah.
Sure. And I think, you know, people are going to start, they already are, like, yeah, coming from all over the world, right? And I think we're going to see a lot more of that on Wolf Island at this space.
Yeah, yeah. The hotel offers a space, because Chris is now part owner of the hotel on Wolf Island. And, you know, part of the vision, of which I was a part of, in the early days of the acquiring of it, the vision really was to bring, to create a space or a hub that people could use, people could traveling through could use, local people could use, and not just for music. It could also be conventions, it could be, you know, film festivals, it could be arts, and good food and
agriculture on the island.
Yep, lots of agricultural projects.
Indigenous projects.
Yep. So just that sort of central hub, it does really service the island in that way. It always kind of has, but bringing it into a more modern role and widening the net, so to speak.
Yeah.
It's in its nascent kind of early days, but it's got a really bright future for sure.
Getting back to your point of like, what's the secret of why there's such a rich music scene here? Like, I think again, like if you look at the venues and what we're experiencing right now during this album, the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing mm-hmm. Arts opened their doors and let us, among several other bands, come in and record for free in their world-renowned recording space, right?
Unbelievable.
And paid the musicians. So Tricia Baldwin, the director there, like had that vision and is still doing it. The Grand Theater, you know, these are big venues that are just really slow right now in terms of audience and their ability to program. And instead, what they're doing is they're opening doors for their local musicians. So we have the Grand Theater has offered us an artist residency from November 8th to 12th. And they're going to give us that Regina Rosen stage and Larry Stafford, their tech, and their Ryan Ball, their lighting, and just like set us up. And then we're going to, on the Friday, November 12th, record like a performance. So I think that's part of it, the way that the venues and the programmers and promoters like step up to like help out the local artists.
The Grand Theater Residency, I know I've seen a lot about it, and I know a lot of people who have gotten that opportunity to take advantage of it. But I think, you know, me being somewhat on the outside of that, and I think a lot of other people who are on the outside of it are probably going, well, what the hell's a residency at a theater? Yeah.
Well, so are the artists too, I think, to some extent.
Right?
Because you literally, I've done one with Michael Dugay, and he was the first one, in fact, and we didn't really know what to expect or what to do. I think he had an idea of how to use the space, but you are just given the space, and it's like, what do you do? And I think, essentially, it's just you do whatever you do. And, you know, you use that space however you can. In his case, we had a scheduled recording project that was upcoming. And he really wanted to work and woodshed those songs. So we got the opportunity not just to do that, but also to perform them and, you know, get things really nice and tight for that recording, which came off without a hitch. Because of that, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. But I think each artist has to figure out what they utilize the space for. But that's sort of the beauty of a residency, is that you are just handed this this thing, and then it's like, well, you're the artist. What do you do?
Yeah, I think the city is just recognizing the potential to build on the history of music in Kingston, right? And I know the Department of Cultural Services, they're like, let's invest in music. Like, let's continue with this tradition of Kingston being a music town. And you're starting to see that with funding and projects like these. So that's great.
Well, let's plug the album one more time. I know we've mentioned that it's coming out in November. What is the exact release date, and where can people get their hands on
it?
Album.
Yeah, woo! So it's called Emergency to Emergency by the Gertrudes, and it's being released officially on November 26th through Wolf Island Records. And also we're getting some support from Zunier online sales, and our distributor is Outside Music Canada. And we're going to have a show at the hotel on Wolf Island, 8 p.m. on Friday, November 26th with The Ropes and Stephen Hyten. We're all label mates. They're all on Wolf Island Records. So that'll be a great way to kick off what we hope will be lots of other shows, including a matinee here on November 28th at the Next Church and on New Year's Eve. And also the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts has invited us to play in early 2022. So it's, you know, exciting that we're going to have the opportunity to play.
Brilliant. Can't wait for those shows. And thank you so much for being on Kingston Live with us.
Thanks for a great show.
Thank you.
This has been Kingston Live. We encourage you to rate us on your listening platform of choice and subscribe where possible. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Titan Sound. Hosted by Sideshow and Riley Jabor. Writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Voiceover and technical production by John Sanfilippo. Promotional photos by Virginia Meeks. Executive producer Rob Howard. Kingston Live is a member of the Canadian Live Music Association. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
Question. All right, we're the Gertrudes, and we're trying to clean up our act, starting with some child-friendly jokes, such as this one. How do you tell a snowman has been in your house?
How do you tell a snowman's been in your house?
There are ice cubes in the toilet.
Hey!
Thank you.
I like that.
Thank you. We're the Gertrudes, and that's all.